So, as Joey said, I'd like to describe some recent work on top physics at D0. And from round one, we know that its top is big and heavy, and we're hoping that it holds countless reaches. But exactly what it is, we don't know yet, and we need round two for it. So
this is the online event display. That's
you got it. And as Kirsten explained last week, and she knows this firsthand, working on top in round one had great impact on social prestige of people. So let's hope that this will be also true in round two. The stakes are high. Joey explicitly forbid me to go through any motivations, so I understand that last week everybody was motivated to the limit, so I will not go through any of this. However, I wanted to point out the obvious fact that until LHC, the Tevatron is the place to study the top, so round two is important. Top was discovered in the middle of 90s at Tevatron, and many attempts were made to study its various properties. However, this all of this was done with only about 100 of candidate events, which obviously shows the importance of much higher statistics that we expect in round two. Speaking of which, in round two, the Tevatron runs at higher energy, which buys another 40% in the cross section, and also was modified to obtain much higher luminosities. The change in the mode of the operation of the accelerator, with much shorter spacing between bunch crossings, required the experiments to undergo major changes, replaced most of the electronics, trigger data acquisition system, in addition to the improvements we wanted to do to the detectors. So there was a lot of relearning of our own detectors, despite that we knew them from round one. Now, the Tevatron performance is finally catching up with the expectations. The recent stars were in the range of 4 to 5, 10 to the 31, and recent days actually were record luminosities shooting up close to the almost the round 2A goals. There is, of course, still way to go, but that's very nice development. Wrong way. Concerning D0, we accumulated on tape already a little over 250 inverse picobarns, and we hope to roughly double that by the end of the year, and this is going to be a really nice sample to work with. And as a comment, there was this annoying discrepancy between CDF and D0 in round one, because we used different values of inelastic cross-section for normalization. And finally, I think there is consensus between the experiments so that this issue will be solved, or is solved. However, for today, most of the results from round two that I will be presenting are from the first about 100 inverse picobarns. The bigger data sample is being analyzed so that it's ready for the winter conferences, but D0 has not released any of those results at this point.
That
distribution of luminosities, instantaneous starting luminosities you showed previously, is an average of what D0 and CDF calculate. Is that correct? I believe that's the peak luminosity plot?
Yeah.
I believe that's the plot that is provided by the accelerator division. So
I'm asking, what is that number? Is it a number calculated for the inelastic cross section of CDF and D0, or is it something provided by the accelerator?
I Don't know for sure. I wouldn't think so, because this plot actually keeps growing without changing. The first part is not changing. After, you would expect that if they used those the new number, the new constant, that everything would rescale. And I don't think it did. Anyway.
Yeah.
Right, but they still have to use something for the
little elastic
process.
This is not the topic of my talk.
Yeah,
so that's just the schematic view of the D0 detector in round two. And comparing to round one, the big change is in the very inner part, which is the new magnetic tracker. But there were also changes made to the calorimeter and to the muon system that's outside. So let me show a few things. That's a representation of our new and shiny silicon detector, and that's a live picture when it was constructed. It provides a nice measurement of tracks and vertices. The plot illustrates the impact parameter resolution. That's pretty close to the expectations from the Monte Carlo. And the X-ray picture uses the gamma conversions to show the distribution of the material and the actual detector sitting there in the experiment. Of course, this is not done using only the silicon detector. This is done copying the information from the next layer of the tracking, which is the fiber tracker. It's a pretty compact detector with a magnetic field of sitting in the magnetic field of 2 tesla. It has 8 super layers of scintillating fibers. And the measurement of track momenta allows us to do quite a bit of spectroscopy in the B physics area with B states and strong states. So it's a D0 talk. I couldn't skip a plot that has a D0 particle in it in the K pi dk mode produced in association with the muon. And this one shows the charm states, Psi2S, and the newly discovered X3872. The calorimeter did not change by itself. The picture shows the phase of inserting the inner tracker into the calorimeter, and you also see the rim of the 2 tesla magnet that provides the field for the tracker. The point is that with the tracker, the information from the calorimeter becomes more powerful. In particular, we can do the low mass spectroscopy of E plus E minus pairs. And also the muon system, it was improved on its own. However, the great benefit to the muon system is by coupling to the inner tracker that provides much better momentum resolution to the measured muons than the muon system would provide on its own.
Is this important to calibrate your energy scale?
The muons?
But both the electrons, and, you know, the reconstructed electron pairs and the muon.
The electromagnetic scale is helped by reconstructing the electromagnetic resonances, right? So E plus E minus pairs. For the Z itself, actually, the calorimeter has the better resolution, but for the lower, and then one can study the linearity. Okay. So with the expected of much better statistics in round two, we are hoping to address the important issues like why is top so heavy and is the third generation special? What's the role in the electroweak symmetry breaking or new physics connection? And together, the tools are measuring various properties, the cross-section, Mars Helicity, we are hoping to observe a single top within this year and move on to measuring couplings and decays, possibly. Now, with the current statistics that I control, this will be focused on the cross-sections, and then I will comment on the determination of mass and W helicity, still using the run one data, but with techniques that have a big impact on run two, and what we expect in run two. So depending what you expect for the luminosity, the number of produced tops will be by large factor bigger than what was available in run one. So we hope that within a couple of years, we should be able to get the cross-section measured to better than 10%. Now, we classify the top decays into dileptons, lepton plus jets, all hadronic, and there is also tau as a separate category. In our experimental jargon, leptons basically mean electrons and muons. Taus are a little bit too hard to actually use them in the top analysis at the moment. However, D0 has a tau capability and observed Z2 tau tau process. So it's a matter of time until we start using this significant fraction of top decays that go into taus for top measurements. The dilepton channel, the work starts with selecting two high PT isolated charged leptons, large missing ET that signifies the neutrino, and two jets, which in the top decays are B-jets. And then we have to worry about subtracting, accounting for backgrounds, which in this case are not very large. They come from WW, WZ, and Z2 tau tau. Which are determined mostly from the Monte Carlo, and the Zdrelian from that are determined from data. Wherever we can obtain a large enough and clean enough data sample, we're trying to do the background determinations from data. However, we have to rely on the Monte Carlo when such sample is not available. And there are also instrumental backgrounds to account for this. W jets and multi-jet events were one of the or two jets fake leptons. So because of low statistics in this channel, even with about 100 inverse picobarons, we just have a handful of candidates. That's not enough to study any distributions, but the data is consistent with expectations from combined background and signal. And that allows a rough extraction of the cross-section with a fairly large statistical error. So this channel will certainly benefit a lot from increased statistics. Now, in lepton plus jets, we require just one lepton and missing ET for the neutrino, and jet multiplicity of at least three or four, depending on the flavor of the analysis. This channel has larger yield, but also higher backgrounds than dileptons. So one goes into using additional techniques like event topology or tagging B-jets to improve the signal to background ratio. So typical traditional lepton plus jet analysis starts with preselecting a sample that are that is enriched in W events by requiring high PT lepton and large missing ET. And then one removes the QC, evaluates the QCD background in this sample by using something that we call the matrix method. It relies on the fact that in events that contain real Ws, leptons tend to be very isolated. However, in QCD samples where leptons are faked, by jets, they are less isolated. So by using two levels of isolation cut, tight and loose, those two samples respond differently to changing requirement on the isolation. So by taking the efficiencies from the Monte Carlo, one can actually separate, write a system of two equations with two variables and separate the events with W's from events where the lepton is fake. So this way we obtain basically the pure background points for W plus jets with multiplicity of jets 1, 2, and 3. Now in the bin 4, we expect a contribution from top. And so far, D0 has been using the so-called Behrend scaling method, which consists of fitting an exponential to the first three points and looking for an excess of events in the last bin. This is far from ideal, and for new analysis, D0 is going to replace the Behrend scaling technology with likelihood-based discrimination. There are variables that allow separation between top and W components in a way similar to what I described here as the matrix method. So we often call it the second matrix method. But this is not yet done for the analysis that I'm talking about today.
So those variables would be like HT, aquinarity, PT, the leading gather.
Yeah. And they are combined into a likelihood because that has a better efficiency than just plain cuts. And in the last step, one enhances the signal to background by requiring top-like topologies, like cutting on large HT and aplanarity. So at this level, one observes some excess of events over expected background. One can improve this feature by employing the soft lepton tagging. It exploits the semi-leptonic decays of the B quark within the jet, the cone of the jet. So by requiring a soft muon, one can actually pay some price in the statistics, but the background goes down much more, and the signal to background improves. This results in the cross section for the soft lepton tagged method.
So this is applying a soft lepton tag to those events that are selected because of the large HT and aquinarity.
Right. This is actually partially illustrated here. That's the HT aplanarity plane, and that's where in this soft lepton tag method the cuts are. Now, the TT bar Monte Carlo tells us that most of TT bar events would live in this dashed square, and that's actually where the tagged events also live. However, most of the events before tagging sit outside of this range. So that's how we improve the signal to background ratio. And combining all the lepton plus jets results with and without soft lepton tagging, that's our result for the top cross section as of last fall. And that should get updated for the winter conferences.
About the likelihood-based analysis,
when
you use words like
likelihood-based, is that really in your neural net, or? That's one
of the techniques. Because it's easy. Yes. Monte Carlo was a training tool.
I didn't get the question. With Monte Carlo as a training tool, or? How would you train? Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Which Monte Carlo are you using?
I'll have a slide on exactly what we are doing for the Mondragon. So the new game, completely new game for D0 in round two, is detagging with our silicon detector. And it's based on the fact that B decay length is significant and B hadrons travel for several millimeters before they decay. So one can either detect the secondary vertex or use some other technique that's in a way equivalent. I'm using here this simpler algorithm that's called counting signed impact parameter tag, which requires just some number of tracks with high significance of impact parameter at the primary vertex. So that doesn't require reconstructing the secondary vertex, and in this way is simpler to analyze. So once we start tagging jets with this technique, we need to know what is the efficiency for B tagging and also what's the rate of making mistakes, which are mistags. So B tagging efficiency has been studied using several methods. I will not go maybe into the details right now, but they are all consistent and give us efficiency of 40-some percent at high jet PTs. Now, this efficiency is for the so-called taggable jets, because you couldn't tag a jet if it doesn't have at least two tracks. And also, you shouldn't try to tag a jet if there were problems with quality of the information from the silicon detector. So there are conditions that are unrelated to the event itself that define taggability, and efficiency, typical efficiency for a jet to be taggable is about 60%. And one needs to fold in both of those efficiencies when one.
Are those different tagging algorithms? What's labeled there?
These are different methods of calculating the efficiency, because we're using data to calculate the efficiency, but in principle, you don't know that this is a pure sample. So one has to play some games. For example, this one is comparing single tags versus no tag data. This is double tag versus single tag. This is a more complicated system that uses more information. Our rate for mistagging, which is tagging a light quark or light parton jet as a B-jet, is about 0.5%. After various corrections. That's a snapshot of the B tagging analysis, and the first idea it conveys that it is complicated. The Monte Carlo, our simulation of the detector, does not reproduce the data accurately enough that we could use the Monte Carlo process to estimate the final number of background events. The tagging efficiencies and mistagging efficiencies in the Monte Carlo are quite different from the data. And this could improve with more work on the simulation of the detector, but we're not there yet. So what we're trying to do is to start from the traditional the event sample that it is in traditional cross-section analysis, where we separate W plus jets and QCD using the matrix method. And then we're trying to estimate how much of this untagged background in W plus jets survives the tagging procedure. So to do that, in each bin of W plus one jet, W plus two jets, three jets, and so on, we're estimating the composition of the sample into the various flavors, like W plus light jets, W plus C and jets, W plus B and jets, W and CC and jets, W and BB and jets, and so on. And this decomposition is based on the generators. We used AlpGen to produce the hard scatter and Herwig to do the fragmentation. We impose matching criteria that require that finally reconstructed jets match one-to-one to the hard scatter partons. We allow Herwig to produce almost collinear B, B bar, and CC bar that merge into one jet. And then, by knowing the composition of the flavor composition of every sample in every W plus N jets bin, we apply tagging and mistagging probabilities to the number of events, which provides an estimate how many events survive the B tagging. And putting everything together in the end, we get number of background estimate that survives the tagging. So in this procedure, we use the Monte Carlo to represent the kinematics of the event and the flavor composition. However, we use data probabilities for tagging and mistags, and for the mistags. So it is somewhat complicated, and since it's a new game of at D0, it's being developed and it's in flux. But that's how currently it is being done. So
B is pure electroweak. It's going to be a pure electroweak process where some light flavor inside of the proton is being changed into a B through.
No, I believe most of those Bs come from gluon splitting. Yeah. I'll come back to this point, because there is an issue with gluon splitting. Is that correctly described? We're assuming that the Monte Carlo generators we're using correctly describe this process.
So have you checked whether this works? If you take W plus three jets, that you get the right prediction, the right number?
That we don't see a signal in.
You could apply to W plus
three. We apply it in every multiplicity beam. That's one example. This table is, well, that says how many tagged events we actually see in every multiplicity beam, and how it compares to the background we estimated the way I described, plus the expected TT bar based on the cross section and tagging probability in the TT bar. And actually, in the first bins, first two bins, we don't see any excess. In the third one, well, probably not much. And here, there is agreement, but the background here would be 8.3, and we see 13, and here background would be 2.5, and we see 6. So these are our signal beams.
How did you fit the total rate for the W plus jets Monte Carlo? How did you normalize it?
The total rate?
So you have W plus Monte Carlo in the first in one jet. So that number you're telling me comes from directly out of the Monte Carlo, or is it normalized to data in the W0 jet bin?
We know before tagging how many W plus jets we estimated in the data, in the traditional analysis that does not involve the B tagging, right? By splitting the sample between QCD, right? And then.
I think that both CDF and B0 have this problem. That they what they label QCD, right? QCD is jets mimicking W's,
right?
But that's can be confusing. At least that even confuses me, and I'm familiar with the notation.
I try to change that in some places to multi-jet, and I should be putting QCD into quote unquote everywhere. Mm-hmm. So that's the outcome of all this, and. Shows the result here for the SVT algorithm, secondary vertex algorithm, and this counting impact parameter algorithm, the beans with multiplicities 3 and 4 are taken as signal beans, and we derive the cross sections. This is still done only on 45 inverse picobarns. It has not been updated for lepton photon. You see the errors are significant, but we already have much more data, like 5 times more data. So this should improve quickly.
Right. Why do you stick to the 10% uncertainty on the luminosity when you gave us before? What is the time of the luminosity?
That's the old result, and it involves other things also, like for example, not having done at that time full accounting for differences between. We used the RAN1 luminosity detector, but we did not recalculate the acceptances and so on. I believe this error is now down to about 7%.
Sorry, maybe I missed it, but the error of background, I mean, the theory error, choice of scales and alpha strong, K types and all of that, is that included in this? And how did you estimate that?
Oh, that's a really long process, right?
Yes, it's a long process, but I mean, kind of given the size of the error loss, I'm surprised that, I mean, purely from theory without any guidance of the experiment, I would have expected even bigger error loss.
You would? Okay. I'll be happy to discuss this maybe offline in more detail.
Just wondering, I mean, how unambiguous this choice is. I mean, could you... do you have any way of knowing that this is a good error bar estimate, or is it just kind of some guess you made?
As I said, this type of analysis is completely new to D0, so we tried hard. I mean, the table of systematics has about a dozen components. One of the big ones is the jet energy scale that is associated with our understanding of the betagging procedure, and so on. Now, offhand, I cannot tell you how much is related to theory, but we can look it up.
Is what we said before, right? What's being used here is information about the relative quantities in the different components.
Right.
In fact, we know that it's very from W plus jets or W plus jets, if you change the scales, the ratios are not going to change that. This information is much more stable than an absolute prediction about how many jets you have.
In
the two jet beam, they see 100 events.
Yeah.
And the only question that they address to the Monte Carlo is, of these 100 events, how many are W plus light jets, how many are W plus GB bar, and how many are WCC bar? And they get, say, 7 to 20, 10. And then the convolute is 7 to 20, 10 with the Monte Carlo of the detector that will tell you how many of those 70 will be done, how many of those 20 will be done, so they calculate the average.
But you still have to, so to speak, extrapolate from W plus 2 jets to W plus 4 jets.
No. For all of the beams.
We do it for each beam, for each multiplicity beam.
But how does it affect the normalization?
You add the contribution of the cost. You measure it as part of the global.
Right, so you might have to iterate, as far as going through and deciding how much of it is GT bar.
So from the Monte Carlo, I'm sorry if I was not clear, but we're taking only the fractional flavor composition in different flavors, not the absolute normalization.
There's actually some notes
given
off of the web page that discusses this.
So this is just a display of a typical double-tacked event where you can see the primary vertex and the secondary vertex on one side, jet, and also on the other side, jet. So,
is there something you put off to the online?
Just like the computer simulation?
No, that's not real data. So the summary of various measurements in different channels, still within big error bars, but they are consistent, and the combined result is consistent with the theoretical calculations we have available. We just need to tighten the error bars with better statistics. Now, I wanted to comment on the Monte Carlo. There were some questions about that, and I personally work more with Monte Carlo than any other aspect at the moment. So Michelangelo, in the opening conference talk, was saying, well, we should be those better physicists that don't rely so much on the Monte Carlo. But personally, I don't think there would be much in terms of top physics results without a heavy reliance on Monte Carlo for various aspects, from simpler aspects like acceptances to more complex aspects like templates and neural nets or the final calibration of extracted results. So what we do, we currently rely on parton level, specialized parton level generators like AlpGen and CompHep, and some more limited use of MatGraph to do both the signal and background samples. And then we process them for showering and fragmentations with Pithiar Herwig. We decay taus with Taola and B-states with EVT-Gen, and that's like a trying to be on the cutting edge of having the best program for every step. However, of course, it also adds lots of effort, because putting it in one seamless stream is not easy. And we actually would like to keep working, and we also with our friends developing those programs, to make this smoother. At the moment, the probably the biggest difficulty is with the first step, which are the generators for the hard scatter, because it's hard for us to put them into the just black box production mode that one just sends a request to the farms and gets the answer back. Now, there are also some other issues associated with such use of those programs. There is an issue related to having only leading order accuracy, which is related to maybe the parton jet matching prescription. And also, similarly, there is possible double counting between the matrix element level and the parton shower level, which is also related to matching. At this point, we have not included the matching, any matching prescription in the generation of the samples. It can be done with some loss of, you know, events and efficiency at the analysis level, but we're still learning how to best do it. So that's why we postpone it to the analysis level. And we are also actively interested in the matched samples on that Steve is going to talk about in the next talk. Just as an example, here is a display from D0 simulation of one of the events from the Steve's W+1 jet samples. And we have a large simulation in progress.
How can that be D0 preliminary?
It's D0 preliminary. It's not official even within D0. It's a private production of the Monte Carlo. And then there are issues whether we, or to what level we can trust the Monte Carlos. The experimental precision will be improving quickly. So this brings up the issue of verification of the generators. One particular aspect is what we mentioned before. We are relying, for example, on the generators to correctly describe the gluon splitting process. Now, it's hard to verify directly because there is only a small number of double tuck events in data available. In round one, CDF studied instead of WBB, they studied BB jet sample for gluon splitting, and found that there seems to be a factor, scaling factor, relative to other contributions. So this factor of about 1.4, so this factor was applied to WBB bar as well, and I believe you continue using this factor. So you can correct me if that's wrong. So that's relatively easy to study because there are many BB jet events in the data. However, there is a difference, for example, in the color flow. So is that applicable? And one could then think about perhaps studying BB gamma, which has more similar color flow. But would this tell us about WBB bar? And would there be, if we find differences, would there be any ways of tuning Algen or some other program of this nature? And is the use of matched samples essential for this verification process? So I'd be happy to get some feedback and discuss that over the course of the week with the experts here.
Use that with the bar, right?
That production with the bar. That's again, right. So in any case, the Monte Carlo is a hard work, and again in the opening talk, Michael Andrew was worried about the low social status of such type of work. So I wanted to make a wish for all of us who work on the Monte Carlo.
Maybe.
So I would like to finish with some discussion of the D0 measurement of the top quark mass and W helicity. That was based on round one data, but it's actively incorporated into round two analysis. Now the stakes are getting not only precise value of a fundamental standard model parameter, but also constraining the mass of the Higgs, which could hopefully be down to 30% kind of accuracy in a couple of years, which is the next best thing other than just finding it directly. So the process of measuring the top mass, one counts known knowns and known unknowns and concludes that it should be possible to do a two-constraint fit. However, it's messed up by many possible configurations. We don't know which jets correspond to which partons. And also there is smearing and other distortion effects. So in round one, the method used was templates, where one constructs a variable that correlates to mass of the top and determines the distribution as function of top mass for background and signal, and then tries to fit the data with those two components. Now, within the last years, within D0 developed another technology, which tries to maximize the use of the information that is contained in the events. And it uses the matrix elements, both for the signal and background processes, and the measured kinematics for the event to calculate the probability that this event is signal or that this event is background, and then finally construct the likelihood for the whole sample. And this plot here illustrates the distribution in the discriminant, which is the ratio of the probability for the signal over the sum of signal plus background. And you can see that there is a discrimination between W jets and TT bar that's quite clear. So that method actually is quite promising. Since it's new, we like to make the comments about general comparison of the old and new ways of doing things. The template method has this feature that it averages over lots of information. Events are not treated individually, and the number of variables one is looking is relatively small. The rest is averaged over. Now, in this method, the new method, each event gives you a probability distribution for the top mass. And then it also uses all the four vectors in the event for basic objects. One nice feature is that lucky events, well-measured events, contribute much more sharply to this probability than poorly measured events. It's like doing the average of measurements by either combining them on average or by weighting them by the average errors, inverse error squared. So, which is the proper way of proceeding. So the probability is the convolution of the Parton level cross-section or this matrix element, PDFs, and the probability that describe detector effects, that a certain set of Parton level variables is measured as the observed values. And then one adds contributions from signal and background treated this way. The bullets list the ingredients that go into the calculation. One has to account for all the conditions for accepting or rejecting events, like acceptance, efficiency, trigger, and so on. And finally, we form a likelihood, which has a parameter that we choose what it is. It could be top mass or the W helicity or even something else. And then by maximizing the likelihood, one obtains the best answer.
I'm sure it's stupid, but how do you tell an event is well measured?
Well, you don't know offhand which event is well measured, but some of them, there is resolutions on every object, right? So some of them are better measured, some of them are less well measured or are more ambiguous in interpretation. So when you feed this into this probability, you get a higher probability for the event that just fits well your assumption.
But a pernicious background could look like it was a well-measured signal.
It could. It's statistical separation.
It could be things like, you know, a muon track in the central tracker. How well does it line up with a muon track in the muon detector?
Sure.
Right. If it's well measured, then the alignment is very good. But maybe it's, you know, 2 sigma off or something. And it would be probably considered a muon that's not so well measured.
How do you combine that with all of these things? And that's the definition for a given event.
Yes.
Analysis. And I assume that then that's a distribution.
Right.
So the integral over the mass will be a number which is not necessarily one. Now, if you have two events, how do you combine the
distribution? One calculates the joint probability, but as a product, it's uncorrelated, right?
But you cannot take a product, right? Because say that you have a good event that indeed has a peaking probability of the
right
mass, and then you have a bad event that, for whatever reason, you know, has probability zero having the right mass.
Those events have different input kinematics, right? That they have been measured.
Event by event, it could be that you don't know what makes a given event have a probability distribution which is not what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
There is a cracking detector, it can be related, but the point is that it's enough in your sample that you have one event that has zero probability of having the right mass, but if you combine events taking a product, that kills.
I just don't see how you would get a zero probability, really. But
haven't you done something wrong if you're telling that your event has zero probability of having less than so mass?
But you have to, you know, this is a problem, right? So you have to decide how do you deal with this problem. That's why I'm asking
you. Typically, a bad event would death probably spread all over the place.
No, not necessarily. Not necessarily.
I'll be happy to show you later the exact formulation that we use. One other step is if we calculate the probability for the TT bar to be background, that's the red distribution in this description, and for WJETs to be background, it's shifted to higher probabilities. So one cleans the sample a lot by applying the cut on the background, the event to be background probability at this vertical line, which out of the initial 71 run one top candidates just leaves 22 events, which are mostly signal, 12 versus 10 background. And the result that I'm showing here for which we maximize the likelihood is just based on this sample of 22 events, which is much smaller sample than what was used for the previous answer. However, the statistical uncertainty on the previous answer was 5.6 GeV, and on the new method, it's 3.6. It's like having a factor of 2.4 more data to analyze. So that actually saves a lot of luminosity. The answer that comes out of this procedure is higher than the run one answer. It's about 180. And when combined with D0 run one dilepton result, it's 179 with those errors. And by itself, this result is as good as the previous world average combined. And we expect that for the winter conference, there should be a combined result, including CDF and other measurements. So this higher value for the top mass has this the impact on the famous blue curve for the prediction of the Higgs boson mass that uses the world data. When we replace the top result in this fit with the D0 new result, it shifts this curve outside of the excluded region. So that's apparently the important enough news that the result got a nice mention in the DOE Pulse publication. And it also included a nice picture of our students who actually did the work, Juan Estrada and Florencia Canelli, and the third Argentinian here is Gaston Gutierrez.
Topo.
He's not Argentinian, so he didn't go into the picture.
There's one thing I don't understand, and that is, if I take a Monte Carlo event, I know how to put it through vector simulation to get a response. But I know that's a very complicated function, and I don't know how to invert it. So, but that's essentially what you're doing. You're taking an event that's been through your detector, and you're going backwards to the model. To the matrix element level, and it's
the,
many paths you can get. Plus, you're limiting yourself to just
the detector is parameterized jet by jet and lepton by lepton in this function. This W function is essentially a smearing sort of function that says how measured energy, parton energy transfers in the detector in the measured energy. And you can study this in the Monte Carlo, and you can apply this function to every object in the event.
So
and then you have to integrate this whole thing. And there were many checks done that it actually closes. So,
but you will also have wrong assignments, right?
Yes. So this method just sums up all the contributions from all permutations. And that's based on the observation that wrong permutations will give much smaller contribution to the likelihood than the good combination. So it's like a self-cleaning kind of procedure. So I mentioned Florenzi also extended this method to look at the W helicity, which is a motivation is that the top decaying as a free particle before it hadronizes, it transfers the spin information to the decay product, so it allows to probe the decay vertex structure. The standard model predicts the negative zero plus helicities as written. Each of those components has its own characteristics, angular distribution in the between lepton and the B quark in the W rest frame, and we can try to make those parameters predicted as numbers in the standard model to be parameters in the fit. So what Florencia decided to do is to fit for F0 while keeping F plus fixed at zero, following the similar analysis that CDF did also on round one data. So when doing so, she now obtains a two-dimensional likelihood distribution where the parameters are M top and F0. In the M top projection, it peaks at the place that I discussed before. In the F0 direction, she obtains this measurement. The error is large, given that the parameter is constrained between 0 and 1. The error is somewhat unlucky because it falls in the tail of the error distribution when you do the ensemble tests. However, with improved statistics, the technology is developed to be applied in round two. With one change, in round two, I think we're going to fit for F plus while keeping F0 to be the standard model value, because it seems to be theoretically better motivated to do it this way. I don't know if I have time for comments here, but there are issues. Certainly, the detailed study shows that there are issues that could be understood better. One point is that only about 50% of top events contribute to the analysis. The other ones are lost because they have more jets, and the analysis requires exactly four. Or actually, a jet from TT bar can be lost and replaced by ISR FSR jet. It's still TT bar event, but to the method, it looks like a background event because it doesn't fit properly the kinematics. So the question is, could this technique be improved by using higher order matrix elements that allow for radiation, or some other method that allows for radiation? Another observation is that the fitted results, when the fit is done on the Monte Carlo, are actually shifted from the input values. So this correction has to be applied on the data, assuming that the Monte Carlo correctly says how big the shift is. However, the shifts don't appear if one requires matching between jets and partons, which we cannot do in data, but we can do in the Monte Carlo. So that's indicative that we don't completely understand, that don't have a completely proper description of those events. And the limiting factor on the answer on the top mass is and the jet energy scale error. When the round two statistics improves, this will be a limiting issue. So how do we overcome this? And one possibility is that one could calibrate the jet energy scale in the same sample by allowing the mass of the W to be a parameter in the likelihood, and seeing how much we have to adjust the energy scale in the hadronic W decay to get the likelihood peak at the right place. But mass of the W also has a similar shift, as I mentioned here. So again, maybe one needs to understand the radiation effect or whatever causes this shift before we can actually use this technique to improve the accuracy. the technique seems quite powerful, so it's being used in other places, is starting to be used in the Higgs searches. So here is a plea from my colleagues to the developers of the Monte Carlos. You do all this great work and calculate those matrix elements, but then they are put into the event generators, which is great, but for people who work with this technique, it would be great to have the same calculation also available as the calculator of the cross section, that you give the input kinematics and you get the answer to be the cross section, and then you put it into your definition of the probability, just piece of code. Otherwise, they have to, every time they have to bother someone like Michelangelo to learn how to get that done.
Okay. So we should.
That's there. Connection to new physics. Recently submitted to PISREV letter, a search for new narrow TT bar resonances. We scanned mass of TT bar, allowing for a resonance that decays into TT bar. We obtained the model independent limits on cross section times branching ratio. And when we use a specific model with a leptophobic Z prime, that actually translates into the limit on the mass. So we didn't find anything, but there are searches for new physics ongoing. And there are many other topics within the top studies and outside. So just as Kirsten said last week, we have about 50 analyses in the works, and hopefully they can be published. So that
you don't need to publish it. CDF had to publish 50 papers.
They had to. We want to. So the final slide. The top quark is back. That statement should resonate in California. And the results will be rapidly improving. We will have much more statistics. But also the physics reach goes well beyond the luminosity because of detector upgrades and higher energy. And also, as a separate point, much smarter analysis techniques, they can make big impact on the physics yield. So we're ready for precision top physics and also hopefully some surprises. Now, in round one, the discussions around the time of discovery of the top quark were very heated, and some companies developed special products to handle the situation. Let's hope that there will be enough excitement in round two also.